Lord, I just pray that you would be with us today. I pray that you would open your word to us. Father, that you would speak to our hearts personally. You know where each one of us stand. You know what we need. I pray that you would answer questions in people's hearts that they may not have spoken to anyone, but you know what they are. And I just pray that this time would be a blessing to our souls. Amen. So from the Bible, we can learn that God is always looking at the end result. He's always looking at the big picture. Like, we can't see the big picture, so it's hard for us to even comprehend it. But the Bible clearly shows us that God is looking at the big picture. So we're going to start reading in John chapter 11. Starting with verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that saith he to his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in a day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest and sleep. Then said Jesus unto them, Plainly, Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us also go, that we may die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off, and many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died, but I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha saith unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come and calls for thee. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit, and was troubled, and said, Where have ye lain him? Then said they said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind, have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore again, groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, Take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. Jesus said unto her, Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus said unto them, Loose him, and let him go. Then many of the Jews which came to Mary, and had seen the things which Jesus did, believed on him. So we can see Mary and Martha are in trouble here. And what do? They run to Jesus, and they tell him that they're in trouble, that they need something. And I'm pretty sure they expected him to drop everything he was doing and come and help them. But he didn't. And their brother died and was buried. And at that point in their minds, hope was over. It was too late for Jesus to do anything because he didn't get there in time. And they're at home and they don't understand why he didn't come. And they thought it would have been so easy if he could have just come and when they called him. No doubt they felt upset with him. And we see that they did when he got there. They both said the same thing. If you had been here, if only you had been here, this wouldn't have happened. And in their hearts, they're obviously saying, but now it's kind of too late. And just a rabbit trail, we can see the heart of Jesus here by the fact that he cried with them. Jesus did not cry for the same reasons that they cried, because he knew that he was going to call Lazarus out of the grave, and he knew that Lazarus was going to come. He wasn't crying because Lazarus had died. He was crying simply because he felt their pain. So we can see his heart when we are going through pain, that he is crying with us. But why did Jesus wait when they called him? He tells us in verse 4 why he did. He said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. So he looked past those few short days of suffering that they went through, because he saw that something greater was in the future. They didn't understand why he wasn't coming. And no doubt, the few days that it took before he got there were like heart-rending for them. And he knew that, but he waited because of a bigger good that was coming from it. And I think we often are caught looking at right here and now what is happening in my life at this moment. And we are not able to see the future or to see what God is doing, so we don't understand. Now, at the cross, we see the same thing, the same picture happen all over again. To the disciples that were with Jesus at the time, it looked like the worst tragedy ever when Jesus was taken to be crucified. But it was really the best thing that ever happened. Let's read in Matthew chapter 26. Starting in verse 47. Says, While he yet spake, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus, and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they, and laid hands on Jesus, and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand, and drew his sword, and struck a servant of the high priest, and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? So we see when they came to take Jesus in the garden, the disciples' first reaction was freaking out. And they thought they wanted to fight with these people to protect Jesus, as if he needed their protection. And he had to remind them that he was in control of the situation. And he says, Don't you know that I can pray to my Father right now, and he shall presently or instantly give me more than 12 legions of angels? Now, that's something like 72,000 angels. I mean, it's a number that we can't even wrap our head around. It's so big. They would have been there on the spot instantly if he had called them. And I think they were probably waiting. Because even though I think they knew that Jesus was giving his life, I think they still wanted to save him from the pain of it. But either way, he didn't call them. He could have spoken a word or thought a thought, and all those people that came to take him would have fallen down dead. In John 18:6, it tells the story of when they came to him in the garden, and he asked them, Who are you looking for? And they said, Jesus. We're looking for Jesus. And he said, I am he. And the power of those words knocked them flat out on their backs. Now, I think if I was going to take someone and the power of their words was that powerful that knocked me over, I would run. They didn't. But I think if we had been the disciples, we would have felt the same way that they felt. They were devastated because Jesus was the Messiah that the Old Testament had described, that had prophesied about, that had promised was coming, and they can't understand why it's turning out so bad. They thought he was their answer. They thought he was the one they were building their hope on, and yet suddenly he's being taken by wicked men to be crucified, and they don't understand. But he was their answer. He was their hope. He was their Messiah. They just didn't understand the end. And Jesus came to die for them, to be their answer. And nobody took his life from him. He gave it. So we often look at our lives and we see everything, to us it looks like everything's falling apart. Because we make our little plans and we say we want to do this and this and this, and it doesn't work out the way we want. And nothing happens right, and we are always coming back to, why is this happening? Why is this falling apart? Why can't I do anything right? And our dreams get shattered and our hopes get crushed, and just when we think we can't take any more, it gets worse. So often. But God has not changed. And the Bible says that he is the same all the time, yesterday, today, and forever. Like, he's always been the same. So that means that he's not taken off guard. He's not caught by surprise. He knows exactly what is happening in your life. And he knows what to do about it. He saw it coming, and he can still take care of you the same way he did when he was on earth. In 1 Peter 4:19, it says, Wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing as unto a faithful Creator. Now, as unto a faithful Creator is what I want us to grasp today. Faithful means, part of the definition of faithful is firm in adherence to promises, contracts, treaties, etc., loyal, worthy of confidence and belief, and so on. So when God allows a disaster to happen in your life, it is only a disaster from your viewpoint. It's not from His. It looks like a disaster because you're looking at this little section of time, whereas He's looking at the whole of eternity. And so, like I already said, the disciples thought it was all over when Jesus was crucified because they didn't understand what God was doing. They didn't understand that He was giving His life, that that was why He came to this earth, to give His life, to die for them. Nobody took it from Him. He didn't die because He was hanging on the cross. He died because He gave His life. And He did it because He saw that, because He wanted to rescue us, and because that was the only way, even though we might not understand it. Obviously, He knew what He was doing. So we can't see into the future, and we don't know oftentimes what God is doing in our lives. We don't understand it, but we can trust Him. In Matthew 10, Jesus was talking to His disciples about things that were going to be happening in the future, and He's telling them not to be afraid. So in verse 29, He says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and not one of them, and one of them shall not fall to the ground without your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows." So if God is presently keeping track of how many hairs are on our heads, and the number changes every day, I mean, I know I lose a handful every time I take a shower, and He doesn't get our heads mixed up. He knows each one of us how many hairs we have. And if He can see every tiny bird that's about this big out in the woods that no human eye has ever even seen, they fall and die, and He knows where they are. So if He can see all that tiny little stuff and He can keep track of it, don't you think He's keeping track of all those big things that seem to, like, freak us out? Romans 8:32 says, "He that spared not His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all, how shall He not with Him also freely give us all things?" So you have to remember that when your plans and your life fall apart, God has not changed. And His love for you has not changed. And His purpose for your life has not changed. 2 Timothy 2:13 says that God abides faithful even if we don't believe. It doesn't matter if we believe Him or not, He's faithful. It doesn't matter if we... It doesn't matter what. He is faithful. And when you cry out to Him to help your situation and He waits 4 days or 4 months or 4 years, longer than you think He should wait, just trust Him anyway. Isaiah 49:15 says, "Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee." You don't have to be afraid. Have you given your life to God? Are you following Him? He promised that He would take care of you. And you're never out of His sight. You're never out of His hearing range. You're never out of His control. You have to trust Him when it looks like there's no hope left, even whatever it is, each person, each thing, each situation is going to be different in our lives when we feel like all hope is gone for the situation that we're facing. And you have to trust him anyway, that he knows what he's doing, that he can make something out of it, or that he can change it, or that he's using it for good in some way. And the end result, the big picture that God is looking at, is obviously eternity, because that's where we're going to be forever. He wants each one of us to be there with him. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone through all the trouble of sending Jesus to die for us. But the truth is, sometimes we are just so earthly minded that we can't understand eternity, and we're not looking forward to it. We don't really grasp it. And sometimes God has to use something drastic to show us, to wake us up, to get something eternally good out of our lives. Otherwise, we would just float along and end up without him. So, obviously, if God has allowed something in your life that you don't understand, something that you can't deal with, he is looking for something eternally good to come from it. And don't fight in that situation. Don't fight him. I mean, it's the natural reaction to say, no, I don't want this. I can't take this. I don't know how to deal with it. And it's true, you don't know how to deal with it, but God does. Just surrender your heart to him. Just do what he tells you to do. And I know sometimes in our thinking, what he says to do is just way out. It's like, are you serious? I can't do that. And think of when Jesus came to Mary and Martha at the grave, and he says, take the stone away. And they're like, what is your problem? Like, we don't want to smell that. It's too late now. Why are you saying to do it now? And Jesus rebuked them slightly by saying, didn't I tell you that if you would believe me, you would see something glorious? And they're like, okay. And then they obey. Now, Jesus could have called Lazarus out of the grave without taking the stone away. I mean, it was a miracle either way. But he wanted them to trust him completely. I think that's why he told them to do it, so that they would just stand on his word alone when they have no idea what he's doing, when they have no idea why he's telling them to do it. And there's so many things sometimes that we don't understand that he tells us to do. I mean, he tells us, well, let's read Mark chapter 8. Starting in verse 35, for whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Now, Jesus says, if you try to save your life, if you try to hang on to it, which your life is your dreams and your plans and your ambitions and everything that you want to do, if you try to save that for yourself and make sure it all happens the way you want it to, you're going to lose it all, and it's going to be emptiness. And if you give it all up for him, you're going to find out that you have everything and more than you had even planned. And it might not be right here in this life, that you have everything that you need and everything that you planned, but you're going to have way more than you could imagine in the next life if you give your life up now for God. So the word of God stands. You have to do it even when it seems way out. I mean, he tells us to forgive, and that's one of the hardest things sometimes that we have to do, is when somebody hurts you or somebody does something mean to you and you're like, I cannot forgive them, because, well, quite frankly, we don't usually want to, but you have to do it anyway, because it's part of being a Christian. It's part of following him, is doing everything he says. So when he says forgive, just do it, and he's going to take care of you. And he tells us to trust him, to not be afraid. And I know that's something that I struggle with daily, is being afraid of the future, because I don't like the fact that I don't know what's going to happen. But it is a conscious choice that we make every day. When we find or feel that fear again, we say, okay, God, it's yours. You're taking care of me. I'm going to let it go. It's a conscious choice that we make every time we feel that bitterness rise up again for somebody that hurt us. We give it to God again and say, you're taking care of that person. I can't do it. I'm just going to forgive them like you told me to. We have to just trust him and do what he says, because he has got us covered. And this is a poem that I wrote recently about, as I was struggling with trusting God for my future, I thought about it a lot. Why can I trust him? Why should I trust him? And there's so many reasons why. He who has made the universe grand, he who has placed the ground where I stand, he who has spoken the stars into space and given mankind such infinite grace, trust him. He who has made the flowers and trees, the rivers and rocks, the mountains and seas, he who could still the wind and the wave, he spoke with his voice, commandment he gave, trust him. He who can see the sparrows that fall, the hairs of my head, he counted them all. He who is feeding the animals wild, he who was born a baby so mild, trust him. He who is holding the world in his hands, our sorrows and fears he all understands. He who is water for each thirsty soul, he who the universe has in control, trust him. He who is life and truth evermore, he for the sinner a crown of thorns wore. He who has warned us to flee from all sin, to open our hearts and let him come in, trust him. He who has given the Son that he had for humans so wretched, sinful, and bad, to save us and help us and make us like new, and given his grace to carry us through, trust him. He who has promised to carry my load and stay by my side o'er every rough road, he who can see each teardrop that falls, he who can hear the faintest of calls, trust him. Yes, trust him I must, and trust him I will. I'll quiet my heart, I'll rest and be still. Though he may crush me and shatter my heart, he also will tenderly mend every part. I'll trust him. Lord, I just pray that you would take these feeble words and your word would speak to our hearts. Father, in each personal way of each girl here, that you would speak to us. Amen.